Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and to the largest segment of society, to those who, like me, have finally come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is 877-376-45. We're going to begin with the sports and the news. We devote 1 hour of the program each week to the lead stories and sports. So what story have you been following, Scott?
Well, I thought I had something that was a good story. I thought it was...
I know where you're going here.
I thought it was something that would be different than what we normally cover, because we always seem to cover a bunch of liars, cheaters, everything else when it comes to sports.
Rapists and pedophiles, yes, in sports.
Are we talking sports or prison?
Well, it's sports, American sports. We have rapists, we have sexual predators, we have cheaters and liars and thieves.
So there's a report from the University of Spoiled Children, which connection to.
USC.
I'll just read the report. It's from the...
Hey, by the way, the old adage, University of Spoiled Children, used to be the case because it's a private school. And drew from Newport Beach and Arcadia and the Monrovia, the really affluent communities in Southern California. And it was not all that difficult to get into, was particularly because the fraternity and sorority prominence on the school. It was just considered, we used to joke ourselves about it being the University of Spoiled Children, USC. It isn't that anymore. It's the most integrated school in the nation now, major university. By integrated, I don't mean African American and Asian and Hispanic. I mean Pakistani and Saudi Arabian and the like. The Muslim Student Association is one of the most dominant in the country. And now to get in, your GPA has got to be well above 4.0. And test scores have to be in the top 1%. It's one of the hardest schools in the country to get into. So it's kind of lost that reputation. But it would, at the time I went there, it was a fun place to go to school.
Well, I think it probably still is a fun place to go to school, just different. But
I went back. The fraternity system has really been ransacked. And the thing that I missed is that the wealthy Chinese families, huge influx of Chinese, and don't even speak English, but huge influx of Chinese. And I have no issue with his private school. They can sell the opportunity to be a student there to whoever wants to pay the tariff. So, and they have chosen to do so.
All right. I've never been to USC, so I can't comment too much on that.
Yep.
But USCTrojans.com reported on Saturday night, USC senior cornerback Josh Shaw was named the team captain at the annual Salute Detroit dinner. For Shaw, the leadership is bigger than how he acts on a football field, and he put that to the ultimate test later that night. While attending a family social function at his cousin's apartment in his hometown of Palmdale, Shaw looked on from the second-floor balcony to the pool below and saw a 7-year-old nephew who cannot swim in distress without help nearby. Shaw instinctively leaped off the balcony, landing painfully on the concrete below. He was able to crawl into the pool and ushered his nephew to safety. Despite the intense pain in his legs, he was then able to grab the ladder and lift himself out of the pool with his upper body. Shaw's nephew Carter is a bit traumatized, but physically okay. Shaw was taken to the hospital and subsequently diagnosed with 2 high ankle sprains, which will sideline him indefinitely. "I would do it again for whatever kid it was. It did not have to be my nephew," Shaw said today. "My ankles really hurt, but I'm lucky to be surrounded by the best trainers and doctors in the world. I'm taking my rehab one day at a time, and I hope to be back on the field as soon as possible," said head coach Steve Sarkisian. "That was a heroic act by Josh, putting his personal safety aside. But that's the kind of person he is. It is unfortunate that he'll be sidelined for a while, and we will miss his leadership and play. But I know he'll be working hard to get back on the field as soon as possible."
However,
so
now that the news media wants to interview Shaw, wants to interview the rescued nephew, USC is blocking all access to Shaw. No one can seem to round up the nearly drowned and still wet nephew. It appears that maybe the story isn't as Shaw reported it.
Yeah, and that's why I said that. I mean, I thought I was going to be... I thought I had a story that would be, you know, heartwarming and show, like, a lot of reasons of why I do enjoy sports. And turned out to just be another... it looks like it's going to be another... Just like all the other sports stories we talked about. So, yep, he won't be... He's not going to be available to the media until the team finds out exactly what happened.
Right.
And
if it were as he reported, he would be with college sports needing a feel-good story desperately after all of the bad news that we've heard from particularly college football. He'd be in front of, because he can't play, I mean, he's not going to play this weekend, he'd be in front of every news agency, and that story would be told everywhere. But evidently, USC received a number of phone calls that are now being vetted that tell a very different story. And we don't know what that other story is. All we're told is that conflicting accounts have come to USC, and they're now vetting them to find out which is true.
Sarkisian's doing his best job to protect Shaw. You know, he said he's a good person. But
he says he trusts him.
He says that...
Have no reason to doubt him.
Due to the calls, he's got to take his the necessary steps and find out what exactly happened, which is what should be done. Which, if every coach did that, we probably wouldn't talk about so many horrible things. So
it surely doesn't pass the sniff test at the moment.
No, it doesn't, and it makes me wonder how do you? I assume that he actually did jump off a second story building. But the question now becomes for me is, if it wasn't to save somebody, why? High ankle sprains really hurt.
And that could be more than a month. Could be 6 weeks with two high ankle sprains before he's can earn a scholarship. You know what school he transferred from? SEC. Florida.
Oh, boy.
Michael Sam is in the news. Why is Michael Sam in the news? I mean, as it relates to the 1,500 or so players in the NFL, you know, he's not in the top 1,400. Why did Michael Sam then make the news?
Well, do you want ESPN's reason for putting him in the news? Because ESPN's reason for putting him in the news was that they talked about his showering habits and how he doesn't shower with teammates because no teammate could tell you that they've seen Michael Sam in the shower, which is really weird. Because I've been on football teams and I've taken showers, but I couldn't tell you who was in the shower with me. I mean, so ESPN had a whole report about how he...
You know, just speaking of that, and I don't know if I'm in anybody's defense here, but the group showers with a bunch of guys was never my favorite part of gym or of the sports experience. You know, I've got lots of friends who are guys, but I really don't feel comfortable standing naked next to a bunch of guys. That's not my thing.
That's just it, though. I mean, nobody. It's not like you're going in there as a team. Everybody kind of has their own process of
right.
You know, after a game you know, calming themselves down. So. It's a slow trickle of guys going in and out of a shower, and I was shocked that ESPN decided to report that
story and that's a sports story
that's a sports story when I mean the real story here where everybody else is reporting is that other than ESPN's stupidity is that Michael Sam made the first round of cuts.
That means what, about 75 is the first round, and I think, what, 53 players actually make the team, get to dress for games?
Yep, 53 is the final roster, is what the final roster would be. So he's got, you know, still 22 other cuts that yep. are, you know, two other cuts that he has to make.
But he's had a decent first three preseason games. I mean, I'm not a fan of the NFL preseason. I wish they'd cut it down to two and make two of those games regular season games. But nonetheless, you know, he got a couple of sacks of Johnny Manziel on the last game, and seems to be able to rush the passer, and that's a skill set that's highly desired in the NFL.
Get you in on third downs all the time.
Yeah,
I think Chris Long had the best response to the whole report coming out about the Michael Sam in the shower.
Mm-hmm.
He tweeted to him. He goes, "Dear ESPN, everyone but you is over it." That was, you know, I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, he's actually, now, whether or not he makes the team or not, he's going to earn his spot strictly based upon his performance. Chris Long's a pretty good guy. He was a good friend of both my sons. Really class act. They went to the same high school in Virginia. And Chris Long, humble guy. Great guy, one of the few really big, strong, great athletes that still was humble and wasn't the least bit belligerent. He is a genuine good guy with a great pedigree. One of the class acts. Great parents and a great situation. So, if Chris Long says everybody's over it, but ESPN. Let's move on to the next story in the news.
I think Long is a captain of the team too, and ESPN actually came out with a couple after this tweet. They came out with a couple of I'm sorry statements. And I can go over those when we get back.
Okay, and you know, the fact of the matter, there is a big story out of St. Louis. There actually should be two, but there is one. They lost their quarterback, Sam Bradford. Same injury that he had last year. He's going to miss the entire season with, I think it's an Achilles, not Achilles, but ACL tear in his knee. We'll be back. Welcome back to Shattering Miss. We've got Glenn on the line and wants to add to the conversation regarding Shaw and his potential swan dive into the pool and crawling in and crawling out to save his nookie. And by the way, if he did it, then, you know, I'm saddened that there are people who are calling the university saying it ain't so. Because a guy does something like that, if he in fact did it, and he ought to receive his time in the sun. What do you think, Glenn?
Well, first of all, as one who works with quadriplegics, has worked with quadriplegics, I would say that testosterone maims. And that accounts for the fact that the vast majority of para and quadriplegics are late adolescent, early adult males.
Yeah, right.
With a strong sense of machismo and poor depth perception. They often think that third floor balcony, fourth floor balcony into the deep end of the pool looks quite doable, and then you realize it was not four that you had to jump.
Yeah.
And,
you know, what they actually say, Glenn, is that the frontal lobe of the brain is the seat of judgment, and that it isn't actually mature in terms of its growth and development until the mid to late 20s. And they say there's actually a physiological basis of stupidity amongst young men, and unfortunately it must be contagious, because today it seems that a similar number of young women have that same illness called teenage stupidity.
Right. Well, and I guess theoretically they shouldn't be able to vote or enlist in the military until the mid-20s or do anything of much significance. But anyway.
By the way, I would agree with that. I would agree. I think the military enlistment ought to be discouraged and postponed. It's kind of like drugs. You know, I think that you ought to be free to enlist in the military. You ought to be discouraged. And, you know, drugs, you ought to be free to mess up your brain, but it ought to be strongly discouraged.
Right, right. Now, what I want to know is where the bleep was the adult supervision down at the pool level? You know,
oh, of course. Why not attempt? You know, they make this. There's a great invention from a second story balcony down to a yard. It's been around for a while. They call them stairs. You know, if you're going to go rescue someone, and you know, typically having usable legs, a lower extremity is helpful.
If you're going to jump from a balcony, if you hang down first and then drop off with your fingers, you've knocked 8 feet, six to 8 feet off your fall.
Right.
You know, and
yeah, eight feet off of a 10 foot fall. Yeah, that's a pretty good deal. But
you should also do a parachute landing fall if you know how to do that. But yeah. But anyway, you know, if you do a PLF. But anyway, I've actually, you know, known numerous quadriplegics, and so often it has to do with that. For, you know, the testosterone infecting the cerebral cortex of the frontal lobes, you know.
Yeah. So. You know, they actually say that if you somehow put yourself in a situation where you are going to have a fall, the way that you have to fall to keep from messing yourself up is to do what somebody does when they're engaged in parachuting out of an airplane, you do land on your feet, but your knees are flexed, and then you do a roll so that you end up absorbing that energy. Because the one of the things we learn when we're pilots is that any landing that takes place over a matter of seconds is survivable. But if you go from 200 miles an hour, 200 knots plus, to zero in a fraction of a second, that ain't going to work. It's just like if you jump and, you know, you're landing feet first, shock absorber.
Yeah, it's never the fall. It's that sudden stop at the bottom, of course. But
the fall never gets you in trouble.
Yeah.
What you want to do is prolong the slowdown, prolong the stop. And if you can prolong it to a couple of seconds, you can knock the impact force to the point where most stops are survivable. And that's what you do when you're shooting.
You can have a left PLF, right PLF, or back PLF. The idea is to translate the force onto the muscular system.
Correct.
The idea is to go down, hit the calves, hit the thighs, hit the butt,
right,
and roll over to the shoulder, you know, so you're taking that force and in a very short period of time translating it to fleshy, you know, muscular surfaces instead of impacting the joints.
And you're prolonging the stop.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, by rolling, you're prolonging the stop, and that's what makes a difference. But, you know, that's one of the things that you find with young men is they really don't have a sense of their own potential demise. You know, when we return to the news, there's stories of Americans going off and playing jihadists, and it's one of the reasons why young men drink and drive and speed and go off and join the military and do a lot of things.
I am invincible.
And they're not. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Scott, you went to high school in the New Hope area of Minnesota. Did you know a young man would have been about your same age, Douglas MacArthur McCain? I mean, that's a hell of a name. I'm not making it up. Douglas MacArthur McCain. Did you know him?
I know the story you're talking about, and he'd be in the exact same class as me.
You played basketball there. This is a kid. It's CNN says that he was a basketball-loving kid.
I went to the same school, Ramsdale Cooper High School, New Hope, for 9th and 10th grade. I was in that school district for pretty much my entire school, earlier school life, and I've never met this person. I've never seen that.
Okay, so Douglas MacArthur McCain was a Christian while he was in high school, but his best bud joined the Army and went off and played warrior in Iraq. And so Douglas MacArthur McCain changed his name, changed his religion, and he went off and played jihadist in Syria, didn't he?
It's rather ironic that he has the name of a military hero and a military congressional whack job.
Correct. Actually, McCain's daddy was one of the highest-ranking admirals during the Vietnam War. And, of course, Johnny McCain, McClown, was accepted into West Point because of his daddy and was a bum in his military career. But, you know, he's now a senator and just loves war. But, yeah, Douglas MacArthur McCain changed his name. I think he changed his name to Abdullah, didn't he? Slave to Allah?
Yep, yep. Or he went by the nickname, Duale, Slave of Allah, something like that.
Yeah.
In the article I saw on it. But yeah.
Yeah, and he was out playing with the Islamic State, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you go from being a Christian in Minnesota and playing basketball with your buds to being a jihadist and the Islam? You know, the article that I read by CNN says, you know, we don't. In fact, it says exactly what spurred Douglas MacArthur McCain's metamorphosis remains murky. I mean, CNN isn't able to figure out what caused this kid to go from playing basketball in Minnesota to playing jihadist in Syria with the Islamic State. Do you think it might, I'm just going to guess here, do you think it might have been that he converted to Islam?
Man, that's a really good guess. No.
Yeah, question. What prompted that is a question, you know.
What we find is that he was arrested a lot. Disorderly conduct, theft, and giving an officer false information. I mean, he was a bad boy. I mean, now that he's being eulogized, it's kind of like our thug down there in Ferguson. You know, it's now that he's dead, he's being utilized as a gentle giant when, in fact, he was a bum. And the same thing is true with this kid. He was on the wrong side of the tracks.
So when do scoundrels become saints?
When white police officers shoot them.
No, at their funerals.
Okay, well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think Michael Brown became a saint for the African-American community much earlier than that, and that's really a shame. You ought to have better discretion in your saints. Scott, we talked a little bit about the fact that St. Louis Rams did have a big announcement, and that is that their quarterback tore up his knee again, going to miss the whole season. Now, I would not have had Sam Bradford in my top half a dozen, even in the top 50% of quarterbacks in the NFL. If you were to rank your quarterbacks, what order would you put them in?
From 1 to 6, Rodgers, Manning, Brady, Breeze, Luck, and Wilson.
Yeah, it's, I think clearly Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in the NFL. And Brady and Manning I'd have as 2 and 3 based upon their play last year, but both are old guys. And it is likely that for one of the two of them this year may be their last.
I think Breeze is old as well.
Breeze is pretty old as well. That's true. That big three, I think, is towards the end of their tenure and being dominant. Luck and Wilson, same draft. You know, one picked number one first round, the other picked like third or fourth round.
One picked to replace Peyton Manning.
Yeah,
he was picked to replace Peyton Manning, and he has.
And the other was picked to replace a guy that no one's ever heard of. In fact, he wasn't even picked to replace anybody. He was actually picked to be a backup. And Russell Wilson is the ultimate overachiever.
Yeah, he's done very well for himself. He's won a Super Bowl already.
You look at the difference between Russell Wilson and Johnny Football. Same kind of stature, although Russell Wilson is a much stronger guy. But same stature, same style of play. And yet everyone's laughing at Johnny Football for all of his antics and his inappropriate behavior, and yet Russell Wilson is kind of the poster child for how to do it right.
Yeah, he came in and Seattle just signed Matt Flynn to a big contract, and then they drafted him, and he actually won the job. So
yes,
he beat out Matt Flynn.
So it's one of the few coaches where the competition is legitimate. In most places, the guy with the big salary is going to get the job because you don't want to show up the management, having to have a guy having a huge salary hold a clipboard. But in Seattle, Pete Carroll actually lets them compete, and you could be a walk-on, you could be a non-drafted free agent, you could be most anybody. You could be the guy that's making $200,000 or the guy that's making $7 million, and you get the same shot at the job. Maybe the only team that's actually like that. The only difference between your group and my groups, I'd have Luck above Drew Brees, but I'd have those as the dominant six quarterbacks in the NFL. And then right after that, my next group would be Phillip Rivers, Nick Foles. So we'll have to see what kind of a year. You know, Phillip Rivers has had good years and bad years. Nick Foles came on very strong last year with the Eagles. Did real well, even though he's not the prototypical quarterback for the Chip Kelly fast-paced spread offense, but nonetheless, he had a heck of a year. Tony Romo is always the enigma. Colin Kaepernick has had a horrible preseason, but the guy's QBR was pretty decent last year. Cam Newton's going to begin the year with busted ribs. Ben Roethlisberger is has won a couple of Super Bowls, but has some character issues and is beginning to get some bum wheels, and man, who knows what Eli Manning is going to show up this year.
I really feel, and this is just my take watching watching years of NFL playing football, those first six that we named, that's your elite. Those are your guys that are elite,
yes,
or have even the potential to be elite.
Correct.
Everybody else behind them is such a... It's just a big bunch of guys that I feel like those guys behind him are interchangeable.
Capable of winning a Super Bowl if the other pieces on offense are really good and if the defense is spectacular.
Which, and again, like I mean, we've talked about this before, but I still say you got to wait and see what Russell Wilson does this year when he's going to be relied upon more to the success of the team. Because the Seahawks last year... They were what they were because of their defense.
And, of course.
And that defense is so solid that, any mistakes that he did make.
Although the offense for Seattle was a very effective defense because they didn't turn over the ball, and they managed to get really important first downs. So the offense was perfect for that. One of the reasons the defense looked so good is because the offense didn't give the opposing offense short field and didn't there were no pick sixes, and they really took care of the ball. Now, this year, I think Seattle will have a better running game, not because of Skittles. I think Skittles is going to get fewer carriers and carries and fewer yards per carry. But they've got some youngsters on that backfield that can flat out scoot.
Seattle's offense is going to be better this year,
much
because of Percy Harvin.
I know you love Percy. He's fun to watch. I would agree.
I don't love Percy because I think Percy Harvin's a jerk.
Oh, he is? Okay. I didn't know that.
I think as far as how good he is at football, I think he's really good at football. And when he's on your team, he's fantastic. And for 3 years, I overlooked, he's kind of a jerk. Everything you said about Chris Long, fast, athletic, Percy Harvin's all that, but he's a jerk. He is arrogant. He is,
I suspect you have the Seattle Seahawks winning 11-12 games this year and winning the best division in football.
Yeah, I do. I definitely do. So.
And you think that San Francisco's had a horrible preseason? Do you think they get to 9 or 10 games?
San Francisco, I think they're going to be less than 500.
Wow, that'll be a hell of a fall. Is that because the coach is insane?
We talked about that before.
John Harbaugh?
I think the coach is a jerk. I think it's something that you can get athletes to buy into your system for a few years, but unless he's doing a overhaul every year, I think eventually they tune him out and they stop listening.
So the second best team in the NFC West, you think, would be Arizona? They'll get at least 10 wins under that scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Carson Palmer will have a pretty good year. Fitzgerald will have a pretty good year for us fantasy football guys.
I would probably shy away from Fitzgerald and go with the other young kid they have, Floyd.
Okay.
But, I mean, Fitzgerald is, you could probably, I mean, he'll be, he's Larry Fitzgerald, he'll still be good. I don't think he'll ever be, I think he'll probably be one of those guys like Jerry Rice to where he could probably be 38 years old and still be effective.
Do you think in the other three NFC divisions you have the Saints or, you know, not only the Falcons good, but now with Lovie Smith down there in Tampa Bay, I think Tampa Bay's pretty stout, got a great defense.
Yeah, I think my other divisions in the NFC are probably the Packers.
Yep, clearly.
The Packers, probably the Eagles or the Cowboys, and then the Saints, I think, will win the South.
Yeah, I happen to like the Cowboys, but that's a sucker bet, so I would go with the Eagles too, and the Packers. And, boy, that SEC division of the NFC, who knows? Three good teams. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. My guess is that with the exception of one division of the AFC, we can do the teams likely to prevail in the AFC in about 3 seconds. East, South, and West, who do you have?
East is definitely Patriots.
Yeah, they'll win 12 or 13 games this year.
Yeah. West is almost assuredly going to be Denver.
Oh, you don't think Oakland? A little humor there.
Yeah
Oakland. I think the Broncos are going to win 12 or 13 games as well.
Yep. And then
and the South
is going to be
dominant.
Indianapolis probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can see the Texans doing something. They got a really good
defense. Yeah, they really improved their defense.
Offense. They've taken something that was really good and now made it.
Yeah, still got to score points. And the AFC South is really, AFC North is pick 'em. You've got three teams, any one of which could prevail. And of course, then you've got Johnny Football.
I'm going to go with the Bengals. I'm going to say the Bengals win it.
Yeah, boy, that's a rough bet, just because they're heartbreakers. But Bengals decent squad this year. The Steelers, who knows? But Steelers always a good organization, and the Ravens, are still strong team. So that'll be an interesting matchup. Hey, there's news out of the Pacific Northwest. We mentioned Pete Carroll. He got a $100,000 fine. The Seahawks were fined $200,000. They must have been really bad boys. What did they do?
their practice was too rough.
They play football and they actually allowed the guys to have contact in a football practice? Oh, no.
Yeah, the Seahawks and Pete Carroll were collectively fined by the NFL, $300,000 for violation of off-season non-contact rules.
Uh-huh.
Which is the collective, the players' union, limit the number of and length of off-season practices.
So the NFL is going to go to flag touch football? It's going to be a non-contact game going forward? I mean, how in the world are you supposed to practice football if it's supposed to be non-contact and... I don't know how you do that.
No, limited contact. Limited.
Okay. Yeah. Well. Seattle's Legion of Boom. They're pretty much a limited contact group, right? Why do they call them Legion of Boom? I mean, is it Legion of Touch?
Their nickname says it all. They have they have two safeties that are
world class.
Willing to not run you over, but run through you, which hurts more.
Yes.
And,
they're one of the few teams that can actually rush four guys and still get to the quarterback.
Yeah,
they've got the best corner in the game.
And the reason why, I find this absurd is that they try and make it seem like this is for player safety, how we care so much about our players that we don't let them practice too hard. But if that was the case, why would they? ever let a Wes Welker or an Austin Colley or
play in a preseason game
get back on the field with the concussion issues that they've had. If they actually cared, why would they do that? And another thing is limiting contact. I think it actually makes it so there are more injuries.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, if you look at the last couple of years since they had the new collective bargaining agreement, the number of injuries of NFL players has actually escalated. It hasn't gone down.
I think that's because you start playing the game, and the more contact you have, granted, contact can cause injuries, but it also, the contact hardens it makes you to where now you're used to being tackled, so you don't go down awkwardly.
Two worst injuries that I have seen this year were in non-contact sports, basketball, where Paul George had that horrible break of his lower leg because he twisted his leg hitting the stanchion. And then the patella tendon injury to Richards of the Angels. And, that wasn't with contact with another player that caused either one of those two. So
they should really limit the contact in baseball and in basketball.
Yeah, so we're in the same view here. You know, the other story that's, of course, of interesting is that TBN, who carries the playoffs for the NBA, is saying that, you know, the only way they're going to be able to pay the tariff for next year's playoffs is to fire a bunch of people. What do you think?
I think it's absurd. The last time they agreed to it, they didn't release the terms for this last round, but before that they paid $800-some million, and now they figured they paid more than what everybody else paid this last round as well. So I think laying people off is
a bad idea.